And we're going to continue down our agenda. Andrew will stay with us. We're at item number 14, small game hunting seasons.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I believe there are 9 items here. Fortunately, only 4 of them are going to have a recommendation for action, so the others will serve as more informational items. And then I'll get a little break after this before I come back with elk. So again, I'll try to go through this quickly, but I will go through the seasons just to provide some information, since this is the first time folks are going to be hearing about these seasons. So the first one is the grouse hunting season, Chapter 410609. This recommendation, unlike a lot of our other recommendations that are 2 years, this small game seasons are for 3 years. So that'll be for the fall 24, 25, and 26 hunting seasons. You can see the dates there. Grouse seasons start the third Saturday in September and run through early January there. Daily limit is 3. Possession limit is 15. Shooting hours are sunrise to sunset. And species of grouse include sharp-tailed grouse, rough grouse, and prairie chickens. So across much of the state, that's just going to be the 2 species, sharp-tails and prairie chickens, that comprise most of the harvest. The recommended change here is to extend the season to January 31st. A theme that hopefully is kind of a recurrent theme that we're trying to look at, whether that be to increase opportunity, quality of hunt, but also to focus on that R3, is to look at any opportunity we can have to simplify regulation complexity, to make things easier for folks to understand. But we do understand, too, that at some point regulation complexity is necessary to effectively biologically manage the species. So it's going to be for sure a balancing act, but in this case the intent here was, and this is not necessarily a package deal, but what would come with grouse would, as you'll see in subsequent action sheets, is partridge and quail as well, to bump those season end dates back to January 31st, provide about 3 weeks more hunting season, and that would coincide with the change that was made to pheasants in, I believe, 2021. So we did see a slight increase in harvest, or at least a shift in harvest, as you can imagine, if you couldn't hunt pheasants before and now you can, that we get about 12% of the pheasant harvest occurred in January for residents, and 5 to 6% of the pheasant harvest occurs in, that was for grouse. Right now we're seeing 12% of the grouse harvest in December and 5 to 6 non-resident grouse harvest in December. Where did I have pheasants? Pheasants was 8%. So since 2021, we're seeing 8% of the pheasant harvest in January. We obviously don't have much of a January grouse harvest, but what we do have is information from North Dakota, which only has a few days, but Nebraska runs the whole month of January, and what they're seeing is about a 7% of their harvest occurring in January. So coincidentally, or maybe not coincidentally, that's very similar to that 8% pheasant harvest we see. So running those numbers with grouse, and actually Director Kirschman had a study on grouse done, I believe, in Fort Pierre National Grasslands that measured prairie chicken and sharp-tailed grouse harvest rates. And those were just over 7% for prairie chickens and just under 5% for sharp-tailed grouse. So if we would see a 7% increase in harvest, and just because 7% of the harvest occurs in January, it doesn't necessarily mean it increases by 7%. There's this compensatory type harvest theory that, let's say, a hunter in this case wouldn't hunt in December and they decide to hunt in January. That would just be compensation. That wouldn't be addition. But let's just say it was additive harvest. We add 7% to the harvest. If we run the math on those harvest rates, it's going to increase the prairie chicken harvest rate from 7.2% to 7.7%, and it's going to increase the sharp-tail harvest rate from 4.8% to 5%. A lot of assumptions there, I realize. We don't know that it's going to increase 7%. Grouse are obviously very different than pheasants. We're also very different than Nebraska, so we don't know what that is. I will say, since 2021, we have seen the percent of pheasants in January harvest go down. So it was almost like right away it came, and maybe people were out doing it because it was new. And since then, it's kind of tapered off a little bit. Again, We have no idea what this change will be. It might be more, it might be less. But the hope would be is that later in the season, this is providing specifically more opportunity for our residents because they'll be in the state and more easily accessing these grouse, as you saw with that discrepancy between the December harvest, where 12% of residents are harvesting grouse and only 5 to 6% of that harvest is non-residents. So that would be the intent, to provide some more opportunity, particularly for our residents, and just to make it easier for folks if they're out there pheasant hunting and they flush a grouse, they could harvest that as well. Certainly understand some concerns with all wildlife's going to be congregating later in the winter around limited resources, around cover. That's going to make things tricky. Grouse do flush a little bit more later in the year, so they might be harder to hunt. And probably most importantly, the last thing I'll say is we do still have that 3-bag limit daily. So even if grouse are congregated in a group of 100, 150, that hunter can only harvest 3. If they shoot like me, they're probably maybe going to hit one of them if they're lucky. So that's all I have for grouse, and certainly happy to take any questions.
Any questions for Andrew? Commissioner Teal.
Is there any sort of data that compares like average party hunting size for grouse versus pheasant that you're aware of?
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
That would be definitely out of my wheelhouse, so I'm going to phone a friend, either Alex Solem or Director Kirschman.
Go ahead, Alex.
I can certainly try to address that. We don't have the information within this state on average party size for grouse. When you think about the kind of the tradition between pheasant hunting and the habitat that these critters are located in, a lot of times it's a lot more singular than it would be like pushing cattail sloughs with a bunch of guys trying to surround it and things like that. You know, even just the basic format of pointing dogs and all that sort of deal on how these animals are hunted. Generally, it happens to be just 1 to 2 guys, 1 to 2 dogs, and then spacing is also a big thing when it comes to hunting. Generally, you're not getting up for close like pheasant hunting. You're usually spread out on the landscape, trying to flush them and that sort of thing. So, at least that's my opinion or kind of input on that.
Thanks. Any additional questions? Comments? Commissioner Whitmire.
Yeah, Commissioner Whitmire, thank you. First, a question, I guess. The harvest, you said a 5% on the grouse and 7% on chickens. Was that for the whole season, or was that for that's pretty low
harvest. Madam Chair, yeah. So the data I have, and again, this is from Director Kirschman in 2008, so he can hopefully validate it if I'm wrong. But prairie chickens, 208 would have been marked, and 15 were harvested. I'm assuming back then that would just be a simple band-type mark. It wouldn't be a transmitter-type mark, but maybe it was a radio-type transmitter. But regardless, 208 were marked, 15 were returned in the harvest, so that percent penciled out to 7.2%. 125 of the sharp tails and 6 were returned in the harvest, and that would be throughout the season. That wouldn't just be 1 month or not representing the entire population. And that was, I would assume, exclusively on public land if it was the grasslands.
Okay. Since that was isolated, I mean, is there, and you brought it up today, are you comfortable that could be portrayed across the state, that we're harvesting less than 10% of the grouse out there? I mean, it just seems like pretty low harvest rate on grouse.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I have to put my upland game pheasant biologist and grouse biologist hat back on. I don't know that you could ascertain that it would go that same percentage across the state. What I would offer, might be less in more areas, because if you think of the density of grouse that we have in the Fort Pierre National Grasslands, the number of hunters that are there, it's a highly desired area when it comes to grouse hunting. I would guess in north central South Dakota, that harvest rate would be even less, would be my assumption. just based on distribution where the hunters are going. When we talk to grouse hunters that are residents or non-residents, there's no doubt that central South Dakota is a primary location where folks go. Number one, because of the density of birds. Number two, the opportunity to harvest both sharptail and prairie chickens in the same day, the same walk. And that's so it's highly desirable. Certainly, as you go westward into South Dakota, you're going to get into more levels of primarily sharptail grouse. And there are areas like the grasslands up in the northwest, Grand River National Grasslands, and so on and so forth. Those are going to be popular areas as well. Again, but based on the number of hunters in there, I would say that that would be a stretch if it would go beyond that percentage of harvest. My guess in most places would be less.
Mm-hmm. Additional questions, comments? Commissioner Beese.
Commissioner Beese to make a comment here. The grouse hunters already have 3.5 months of season now without adding this to the end of January. Is that right?
Madam Chair, that would be correct. The grouse season begins or opens on the third Saturday of September.
So are we, by extending the season, we're really not attracting new hunters for the month of January, just giving the existing grouse hunters this another month to hunt?
Madam Chair, sorry, Commissioner Beese.
No, go ahead.
I think that I don't believe that we're going to all of a sudden attract a bunch of new grouse hunters by adding the month of January. I think it goes back to what Andrew was describing, is it reduces the complexity. We get questions. We have people that are out hunting pheasants during the month of January. It'd speak to our officers, speak to other staff going, can I shoot a grouse if I see one or can't I? They have that question. And so by doing this, you reduce that rule regulation complexity. Is it going to be a biological impact? We do not believe it will be. What it does is provides maybe a little additional opportunity. It would be a perk or quote unquote the sprinkles on the cake if you're out on a pheasant hunt and you happen to encounter some grouse at the same time and have the opportunity to harvest a grouse. I think that would just be an additive for that particular day. So would it attract or recruit a bunch of hunters, grouse hunters? Probably not, but it certainly provides that opportunity for those upland game hunters that would be out during that time frame.
You know, and I support, you know, getting people out as much as they can and hunting as much opportunity as we can, but we keep extending these seasons more and more and more. And when does the wildlife and the landowners and stuff get a break from all this pressure? And to me, I think 3.5 months is more than adequate time for hunters to access the grouse and adding another month to it. That's just my opinion. So I don't really care for adding another month to the season, is my opinion.
Additional comments? Commissioner Bartling.
Commissioner Bartling, thank you, Madam Chair. And Director Kirschman, thank you for that information. I'll have to kind of disagree with my colleague. You know, I see down in our Gregory, Tripp County area, you know, it's so heavily hunted with the pheasant seasons, especially a lot of the non-residents and whatnot. And in that month of January, it kind of seems to be a time frame when actually the residents and the landowners can actually kind of get out and have a little bit of their own, quote-unquote, hunting season, for lack of a better terminology. So I kind of see this as as you have mentioned, maybe a prime opportunity for some hunters. We see the grouse, you know, they're going to huddle up around the bale stacks and out in the pastures or wherever those bales are stacked. And a lot of times you don't get the opportunity to go hunt those until after the first of the year, when the influx of the non-residents have kind of left our area. So I kind of like the idea, and I guess I am open to hearing more about it and seeing if it's not going to be a biological impact and not really have a strong inundation, you know, on our lands and whatnot. Residents, I think, would be, in my area, would appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Whitmire.
Yeah, Commissioner Whitmire again. On just kind of reflecting back on the pheasant component that got us into the January was back in 19, we did a lot of talks about, you know, pheasants, and one thing we found was that we were ending the season with a large quantity, percentage-wise, of roosters to hens, and that was something, I think it was 2010, it was the first time we had 50 roosters left per 100 hens from, you know, almost 70 years, 80 years of pheasant hunting history, where we were down to 21 in some years in the 80s, roosters per 100 hens, and, you know, in the mid-30s, kind of what probably an average. Well, after 2011 was down to 41, but then we hit 50 again in 12, and we got into the upper 50s, and we hit 62 when we opened this subject, because that was a lot of roosters to have left. And we identified the changing and cropping of South Dakota lands from a small grain, pretty much prevalent, especially in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, to a conversion to corn and soybeans. And that changed pheasant hunting, because those pheasants utilized those standing corn crops. And so we had the same length of pheasant season, but really that opportunity for hunters to really make good with that opportunity of hunting those birds didn't open up until those fields were open, until those fields are harvested and that ground was open and the pheasants were back into the grass and whatnot. So we opened January with that intent of, you know, enabling hunters to utilize that resource that had just kind of waned, and trying to get more hunters involved that way. And I think looking at the numbers of what we did on the pheasants, we've had positive feedback on that. We've had good numbers. This last year, we don't have the 23 season, which just ended at the end of January, numbers in yet, but I would say it's going to be in contrast to what we saw in 22, because 22 was a terrible winter, and I don't think, you know, I know in our area anyway, folks weren't able to get out there hunt much anyway in 22, even though the season will open. 23, I know of one account where guys have been keeping track for many, many years of that last hunt that they did of the season, and this year was the best success they ever had for a final day of the season. And that, you know, certainly was tied into the weather, but it's also tied in with nest predator, I believe, that we've done a lot of positive things. But I guess I just want to make the point that, you know, I don't feel we can correlate the pheasants with the grouse, because the grouse, I feel, that conversion from corn or from small grain to corn didn't affect the success of the hunter. I think that they've got the 3.5 months. I think that's still 3.5 months for a grouse hunter by and large. I don't think that's been negatively impacted by that row cropping. Having said that, I think about landowner, relations with the hunters, and 3.5 months of, if you've got grouse, you know, that's probably enough. I believe we call it fatigue, and we don't really want to push that. So I'd really want to see how landowners would feel about that, because, you know, again, they've got 3.5 months already, and another month, I don't know if that applies to grouse, and certainly isn't identical to what we saw with pheasants.
Any additional comments before we take a motion and an action on this item? With that, we do need a motion and a second. Motion to adopt. Motion to adopt by Commissioner Bartling. Seconded by Commissioner Cole. I would like to do a roll call on this one so we know for sure exactly where we fall. So Liz, if you would go ahead and do that, please.
Bartling?
Aye.
Cole?
Aye.
Loggin?
Aye.
Keel?
Aye.
White?
No.
Whitmire?
No.
And Rissler?
Aye.
4-5 yeas, 3 nays.
5-3, the motion is adopted. Thank you.